Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John. And I'm not actually here right now. Despite it being this close to Christmas, I have taken a week off and I'm in Vienna. So as you listen to this, I'm probably at a Christmas market drinking some glue wine and eating far too many carbs. I don't know if you've been to Vienna. It's a very beautiful city, but it's kind of a strange one because, you know, for one thing, it used to be this capital of this enormous Central European empire. And you can kind of feel that everywhere. It's got these grand buildings. These palaces everywhere, and it's now not the capital of a European empire. Now it's the capital of quite a small country, but it does give it a sort of grandeur. Another thing that's kind of strange about Vienna these days is that it has a very different political culture from the country that surrounds it. Vienna is a very sort of liberal, quite an international place. Until 2012, part of the ring of boulevards that surround the old city centre was named after a former mayor called Dr. Karl Lueger. The problem is, Dr. Karl Lueger, who was mayor at the turn of the 20th century, was kind of really unpleasantly anti-Semitic. So in 2012, after much debate, the city authorities decided to rename Dr. Karl Lueger Ring, and it became University Stadt Ring instead. I said that it's a very different political culture from the rest of Austria. You can really see that if you look at the maps of last year's Austrian presidential election. That election, as I'm sure you'll know, being huge experts in European politics, that election was won by the Green candidate, Alexander van der Bellen. But if you look at the maps of the results of that election, it's really just Vienna and a few other cities like Salzburg. There are these tiny green dots in this sea of blue. Because most of rural Austria voted for a right-wing populist called Norbert Hofer, who is very right-wing. This is sort of proper, sort of slightly scary territory here. Anyway, that's enough talk about a liberal city that was once the centre of the world, surrounded by a country of a totally different political culture. Let's talk about London and Brexit. The interview you're about to hear was actually recorded, months ago. It was recorded on the 1st of June, a week before this year's UK election. Editing it now, I was shocked to find that there's a hint of the sort of unexpected result of that election to come in some of the data that we talk about here. See if you can spot it.
I'm James O'Malley. I'm a freelance writer and journalist and that sort of thing.
Also, I believe last year you were briefly an advocate for London independence.
Yeah, following the EU referendum, I accidentally founded a secessionist movement that I'm not entirely sure I believe in.
So how ironic were you being at this point?
So I started the thing. I started this petition, I think at like 5 a.m. on the Friday after the referendum. So literally as David Dimbleby was on the TV and said, actually, we're leaving the EU. I felt really, you know, sad about this. I think we share opinions about Europe in that respect. I'm one of those people who think that ever closer union is a good thing, which is a really unpopular opinion to have.
Yeah, me too. I've never there are problems with the EU, but I've never been bothered by ever closer union. I think that actually sounds quite sensible. Anyway, did you also like Star Trek as a kid? I think it's probably that, to be honest.
Weirdly, I never watched Star Trek. That's like a nerd. I know I look like a very nerdy, overweight man, because that's literally what I am. But weirdly, I've never watched Star Trek. But
I just think I'm already off topic, but I think my pro-European attitudes come largely from watching sci-fi with sort of unified Earth governments in it. But anyway, it's 5 a.m., the day after the referendum.
So I was frustrated, I was... angry. I'm a, you know, a liberal who lives in North London, so I thought I'm going to start a petition because petitions can change the world. Not entirely seriously. So I just went to change.org and typed in, yeah, let's make London independent, because clearly London had voted very differently to most of the rest of the country. And I was planning to go to bed, but then suddenly it started sort of accruing thousands and thousands of signatures, because I clearly hit on something. So I basically was positioning around, you know, Sadiq Khan, Mayor Sadiq Khan, wouldn't prefer to be president. Why don't you, you know, join the EU, join the Schengen zone and declare London independent? And this clearly sort of struck a nerve with sort of, I guess, sort of bitter Remainers who were sort of slightly shocked by the result. And it just went crazy. Like, literally every time I'd refresh the page, it would be going up like hundreds of signatures a time. And then for the whole weekend afterwards, I was like the silly story to sort of cap everyone's EU referendum coverage, so I had international TV crews queuing up outside my house. It was very, very odd.
So at what point in this process were you starting to think, oh, I'm not sure I thought this one through, lads?
Well, it was quite really interesting seeing the reaction. So I think most people who signed the petition, it got to 180,000 signatures.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I think most people were like me. They were sort of really staunch Remainers who, think that we should be an open and welcoming country and this sort of thing. But there were actually a few people who signed it who do actually think that London should be independent. I did an event at Conway Hall in London a couple of weeks after the referendum, and I was invited along because I'd done this silly viral petition to be on stage. And afterwards, the people come up to me going, right, when are we going to do this? Let's start a movement. Let's start a political party. And I was like, hang on, I'm not really sure I believe in this cause fully. Because my sort of line on it was, you know, I put as much thought into my cause as the Leave campaign put into theirs.
Which is actually, as we're now finding out, it's not a great basis for a platform of government.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. I don't think we have had enough of experts. If I want to fully back this, I want a million, you know, experts and academics and think tanks to sign off and go, yeah, this could actually be a thing that would be a good thing in the world. But yeah, people have actually been hardcore sort of proper Londependence supporters who have tried to sort of start their own thing. And there's a number of Twitter accounts. I think they have a few meetups. To be honest, I'm not entirely in touch with the movement now.
So you've created this monster and then just set it loose in the world to cause havoc.
Yeah, well
you're basically Frankenstein.
I'm a bit worried. I sort of have accidentally sort of undermined the sort of, you know, post-Westphalian order or something, because because if you look, like, I think after Trump won, there was sort of a California independence referendum or independence movement, and various other cities have sort of said, oh, let's be independent as well. So hopefully I haven't sort of caused the end of all Western stability by sort of starting this petition as a bit of a joke. But
well, city-states are a thing. I mean, like, you know, Singapore was ejected from Malaysia after quite a short period of time and has been incredibly successful. It's one of the most successful countries of the second half of the 20th century, if you kind of look at what happened to living standards there. So, it can work.
Well, I'm quite persuaded by, I think it was the guy you had on the podcast a while back who was basically arguing that cities and mayors are the future sort of primary organising unit.
Yeah, Benjamin Barber. He died quite recently.
But I thought he was very persuasive. And also I thought, you know, if like the intellectual rationale for independence, I guess, was looking back to like medieval sort of city-states, the free states. So these sort of oases of like learning and relative liberalism for the time. People could make their own destiny there. That's why we had, that's how social mobility became a thing, because people weren't just, you know, born on a farm and died on a farm. People would go to the cities and be able to do their own thing. So that's sort of why I was thinking, well, yeah, London's sort of open and welcoming like that. Maybe an independent London could be a thing. But
okay, how are we defining London though? Because London, you know, City of London proper and 32 boroughs. I believe 5 of those boroughs did vote Leave. I actually grew up in one of them. You know, in the event of like London going independence, the London Borough of Havering is going straight back to Essex. I think probably by mutual consent, they won't want to come along. London won't want them to come along. But so, like, where are you putting the boundaries here?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. As you might have guessed, I haven't really thought the London independence plan through. But I've been saying I don't want London independence in any sense that I would want it to be the sort of place where you'd be putting up border posts on the M25 and having printing our own currency with, like, I don't know, Barbara Windsor on or something, because we'd join the euro.
She works bloody hard.
But in terms of sort of drawing the boundary, you know, I don't know. I guess you could go for the sort of ultra-Romania. Interestingly, I did do a sort of... I downloaded all of the signatories and worked out which sort of constituencies and which areas of London they were all sort of located in. And basically, I've now got a sort of map that I can't share because of data protection reasons, but I've got a map of all, basically... ultra-liberal London. So it's all of the sort of moderately affluent liberals, I guess, who signed the petition, who are the sort of hardcore Europhiles.
Can you give us any sense of like which bits of London are included in that map?
Basically, it's exactly where you'd expect. So it's Islington, it's Crouch End, it's Dalston, it's those sorts of areas which do have.
Zones 1 and 2, except for the really posh bits out west? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think more or less. Although, actually, the weird thing was a lot of the sort of posh bits. So sort of Kensington had quite a lot of people sign it in there as well. So, yeah. And in the number of the seats, there were sort of more signatories of the petition than the sort of Tory majority, I think, or something like that. But actually, I can't work out what the political significance that would be because I can't do the maths on it. But
one of the reasons I think boundaries are a difficult question with any of this, any argument like this, not just the sort of London Pendants thing, is London doesn't exist in a vacuum. Right? So the functional footprint of London is much, much bigger than either that kind of, you know, core liberal London or like the urban area of the city. Like people will commute to London from all over the southeast of England and beyond. Mm. And like it's very difficult to see how you could kind of sort of cut the city proper away from its hinterland, which is often much less liberal and pro-Remain.
Yeah, no, well, I completely agree with that assessment because I live in Crouch End because I'm a complete stereotype. I wander through there thinking, oh, this is lovely, isn't it? Just isn't London just nice? And then when you get the train or you go further out of London and you see like just all of the endless sort of rows of warehouses and basically all the support infrastructure to keep London going on the outskirts, then it just makes you think, yeah, it's not, you can't just have relentlessly nice, lovely, liberal London. There's got to be other stuff to keep this stuff going.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if you saw the French election result a couple of months ago, where in the second round, Macron got something crazy, like 96% in the city of Paris. Hardly anyone voted for Marine Le Pen for, you know, probably a similar reason to the fact that, you know, London so Remain, because cities do tend to be kind of liberal and anti-racist and so on. But that the city of Paris is not really all of Paris. It's just kind of the official municipality. It's that sort of zone 1 and 2 area again. And my suspicion is if you kind of looked at the economic footprint of the city, then there's probably some Marine Le Pen votes out there somewhere. I think this is probably quite a common pattern, is the suburbs are not quite in the same political culture as the city itself.
No, I think that's right, and I think that's why, as a transitional demand rather than full London independence, we just gave more powers for the sort of London and the wider area, because that's surely something everyone could get behind. Because you know, I think City Car made this argument in the days following the referendum as well, that it is very different to the rest of the country in terms of its needs and its challenges and what it can do. So, for example, you know, most people in London use public transport, so transport is a bigger issue for us. The housing crisis here is magnified more than the rest of the country. So maybe more powers for London. That could be a thing that all of London, whether Leave or Remain voters, could get behind, because then we could have a mayor who's empowered to try and solve these things.
Okay, well, that seems like a much more reasonable demand, so...
I see, I've sold out now. I'm a politician, haven't I? I started with this radical agenda, got the people on board, and that now I'm mellowing out and because of the political reality.
I hope you're looking forward to getting denounced on Twitter by the hardcore. I mean, these people do still exist. Like, I do occasionally get angry tweets from one of them for not taking it seriously as a cause.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I am a little bit worried, and I think I've probably got some sort of disillusioned original supporters. So, yeah, so sorry about that if you're listening. I guess maybe Che Guevara ever like disillusion anyone? Did anyone like fight the good fight and then he? I don't know. But
you're basically Tony Blair, is what we've learned. Why don't you just go and invade a medium sized country?
I'll do my best.
So, did you spot the prediction? It was the high concentration of Remain votes in Kensington. The idea that the number of angry Remainers in some seats was actually higher than the size of the Tory majority. A week after we recorded that, the Tories lost the seat of Kensington to Labour on a 10.6% swing. One of the biggest shocks of the election, and I was sat on that data, and I had it just passed me by. I should have put a bet on. Anyway, next week, if all goes to plan, will be our Christmas special, our proper Christmas special this time. Stephanie's meant to be coming back. We haven't quite worked out what we're going to talk about yet. So if you have any strong views about that one, then drop one of us a line on Twitter. And we'll see you next time.